And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of your favorite celebrities. This is Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another amazing episode of Gold Mines, where we do what? Well, this is where we get into the minds of amazing comedians or comedic personalities or people who just understand comedy. Oh, my. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Today's guest. Well, today's guest is a staple in the industry. I mean, look, he seems to be always right at the intersection of the world's comedy and film. And I should say on the better side of it, because he's done so many amazing things in that space. I mean, God, he's done everything. From 2018, there was a film called Vice. 2015, movie The Big Short. We're talking Anchorman, Step Brothers, Get Hard, Talladega Nights. This guy's written, co-written, and directed and produced everything under the sun in the last decades. I will say this. He has an Oscar, which, goddamn, is a hell of an achievement. Ladies and gentlemen, this man is Adam McKay. A friend. I can say that. A friend.
Kevin, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you taking the time. I really do.
Philly brothers have to stay together.
Philadelphia, stand up.
Yep.
Stand up, stand up, stand out. Adam, you know where I'm going to start this conversation, man? First of all, I love to start off by giving flowers when they're due, and that's why I read that that introduction, because your imprint, your handprint, rather, in the space of comedy entertainment is one like no other, man. And your partnerships that you have formed and the relationships that you have been able to make and keep and stay true to along the way are also unbelievable. I want to start off with a little Funny or Die sketch that you and Will did. And there was an amazing little girl in this sketch. And this was the sketch about the little girl. The little girl was supposed to be drunk and she was a landlord. And Will Ferrell was late on the money. And he didn't have the money to pay. Who was this little girl, Adam?
So that is my daughter, Pearl. And Pearl is now 16 years old. And believe it or not, like minutes before we started this, she just pulled up in a car because she can drive now and got out with my wife. And just said hi and just walked by. But Pearl is now 16 years old, which is mind-blowing. And she wasn't even quite 2 years old when we shot that.
No.
She was like 21 months, I think. 22 months when we filmed that video.
Well, Pearl not only was amazing in that video. The reason why I brought that up, man, because it just shows, A, how time flies. Right. And I remember that video really hitting the internet. And this is like in those stages of Funny or Die when you guys are really getting into it. And, you know, this is like one of the sketches that Will had did that had just went viral. And the talk of the town was a girl, but then it was Adam. It was about you just putting your girl in it. So my question was, were you guys directing Pearl, like, you know, along the way? Was that a long setup and shoot to do this whole thing?
More Gold Mines with Kevin Hart after this.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Now more from Kevin Hart on Gold Mines.
So it was basically, we were starting this little website. We thought it would be like a clubhouse for our friends to do sketches because we weren't on SNL anymore. And we just thought it would be a little tiny kind of fun thing to do. And we needed a first video. So I told Farrell, I said, look, my daughter's at that age She's super cute. She will say anything you say to her back to you. It's a period that little kids go through where they just do that. Mm-hmm. And I said,
parrot phase.
I like it.
The parrot phase. They're parrots.
You have just named it. That will be in psychology text for the next 100 years, Kevin Hart. And so we brought her up there, and it was Will's son Magnus's birthday party was going on. We were in his guest house. And Farrell was like, all right, I don't have a lot of time to do this. So he like came in the guest house. My wife was there. My friend Drew Ances was on camera, old buddy of mine. And we shot the whole thing in like 40 minutes. And we just fed her the line. She would say them back. And we didn't think anything of it. It was like a goof around. And then my friend Drew was editing it. And he's like, hey, guys, this is really funny. And I watched it. I was like, oh, yeah, that's really funny. And I remember my wife said to me, if you turn our daughter into a child star, I'm going to kill you.
Oh,
and
my God.
I said, honey, it's not going to happen. Like, because it's Will, it'll probably get like a million views. And then sure enough, when it dropped, it was crazy. It like crashed the servers for the site. I think it's at like 150 million, 200 million views to this day. And she got offered a Jackie Chan film. They wanted to do, like, people were asking for her autograph. We'd go to restaurants. We went to this one Thai restaurant. All the wait staff was like, can we have her autograph? So my wife was going to, like, destroy me. But we were like, all right, she's not going to do the Jackie Chan movie. She won't do the People magazine profile. So we pulled it all back. We did one more video, and then we retired it. And now she's just had a normal childhood. But, yeah, that was Pearl.
That's strong. By the way, I would have done the same. I would have pulled it back. You know, I'm not big on the kids. Well, my kids, I should say that. Let me make sure I make that very clear. My kids jumping into business at the young age. I was definitely offered the opportunity several times, and I turned away from it. And, you know, it's not to knock the other parents or actors that have allowed their kids to get into business early. It just didn't sit well with me. I didn't like the thought of taking a childhood away.
That was the big thing, was like, let them have a normal childhood. However, there are plenty of people that were child stars that are one, you know, Ron Howard, who, without exaggeration, might be the nicest man on planet Earth.
Unbelievable.
Nice. Jason Bateman, Ryan Gosling, like there's a long list, Christian Bale, of people that were child stars that have wonderful careers or wonderful people.
Is the list longer of people that came out amazing than not amazing?
I was just thinking I would love to see the list. Because you can name a lot of people that came out amazing, but then there's a pretty long list of people that had trouble. So I don't know. I'm curious too. I think the key is, are your parents desperate for that money from their kid? Are your parents struggling? Then I think it probably puts like adult pressure on the kid. But if you just do it for fun, if it's like, oh, how fun, you get to be in a movie, like then you're okay. I mean, it's a tricky thing. We just had, very sadly, one of the kids from Talladega Nights just passed away like about two months ago. I don't know if that had any relation to his acting. It seemed like he had given up acting at that point, but I don't know. I'm going to say my wife was correct, though. We were smart for not doing it.
Yeah. You know, I think it's not about what we're talking about here. Of course, we're talking about our personal opinion. And dealing with our family, you know, we're talking about our kids here. So this isn't to pass judgment on, you know, the volume of kids that have done it.
No.
It's just, for me, I remember when the conversations came up, I said, the biggest thing is the work, right? And as an adult, it's cool to have a choice to do the work. You know, like you're in the entertainment business as an adult, you know that these are long days and you know what you're signing up for. You know, for the kid, it's almost as if I felt like I would be signing my daughter up for these long days to do these things, you know, that may or may not be like after a certain period of time. And I was like, you know, to make that decision for you or to allow you to be hype in the moment and say this is what you want without really understanding it, I was like, I would much rather you get to an age where you can make a decision as a young adult and follow through with it, rather than, you know, me putting you there or forcing you to stay in it. Something like that, right?
I like that. I think that's pretty spot on. I mean, you look at sports, you see it with certain sports guys too. Like the famous one is Todd Marinovich, the quarterback for USC, whose dad raised him from day one to be a professional quarterback. And later, Todd Marinovich had a lot of issues, you know, got into drugs, struggled. I think he's doing okay now, thank God. But that was a case where he never got to be a kid. He never got to, like, find his own voice. And, you know, when he got to the Raiders and the NFL, he got drafted, he crashed. So you see that a lot with the kids, too, that are raised from day one. You're going to be a professional athlete. Everything's about the sport, every single thing. I think you're right. I think you got to let them find their own voice to some degree. And I think if you look at the examples like Ron Howard, he was able to find his own voice. Even though he was a child actor, he still did his own thing and found his own happiness. But anyway, yeah, it's a good question. Yeah. I think I'm with you, though.
No, it's definitely a good question with two great answers. What I want to get into now, man, I want to get into you and just your rise within writing, directing, producing, etc. Right? This relationship between you and Will, how did you and Will come together? What was the beginning stages of this? Was it SNL?
So Will and I were hired on the same day at SNL. So wow. I was sitting in the waiting room to go see Lorne Michaels, and they had flown me out, and I had auditioned as a performer, but I didn't really do impressions or big characters. I kind of mostly was just myself. So I kind of knew I wasn't going to get hired as a performer. So I had given a writing packet as well. And in the lobby was Sherry O'Terry, Will, my friend Tom Giannis, and myself. And wow. One by one, we all went in and got hired. And then afterwards, we were all like, holy crap, we just got hired.
You hired on the spot?
Hired, you know, called me in the office. Lauren always does this funny thing where he never says it directly. So he's like, Adam, you know, the way it'll work on this show is you'll be here and you'll write material. Some will get on, some won't. You'll live in New York. And then I had to say, wait a minute, am I hired? And he's like, yeah. And then he still kind of won't say you're hired. He just says, so you'll be starting in 2 weeks. So you have to kind of put it together. And so I walked out of the room and we had all had that meeting and we were like, you know, wow, we just got hired for SNL. We should go out and get a beer. So we all went to some bar and got a beer. But the funny thing is, and everyone will tell you this about Farrell, he's a very normal guy when you meet him.
Absolutely.
You don't have any idea the fastball that he's got when it comes to comedy if you just talk to him. So I thought in my head, oh, that guy's a performer. He must be like a straight man or something. Like, he just seemed, whereas Sherry O'Terry was like joking around doing bits. My friend Dave Koechner was doing bits. We were all joking around. Will was pretty reserved. And it wasn't until the first read-through where he had sketches. The other trick with Will is he's a really good writer. So the first read-through, he uncorked like these three or four sketches where we were like, whoa, where did that come from? Like totally different characters. And then slowly Will started hanging out with us because we did bits all the time. Even if we're just hanging around, we're always joking around. We're always pretending we're someone else. We're always screwing with someone. And he liked that. So, and then he started doing them with us. And we're like, oh my God, this guy's better at doing bits than anyone around. And that was kind of it. Then we became friends and then we started writing together. And it was just so easy. Like both of us had very similar sense of humor. Neither one of us are very argumentative guys. Like if one person felt strong about something, I'd be like, all right, I trust you. Let's do it. And vice versa.
Let it go. And no debates.
No debates. And if there was no digging in. He's got a really healthy ego. I'm not a big dig in kind of guy. And the writing was just a breeze. And off of doing a bunch of sketches together, when it came time to do movies, we wrote a script together and it was just as easy. I mean, it takes time to write a script. It's hard work, but it was just a pleasure. And we were kind of off to the races at that point.
I want to make sure that my listeners heard that, because what you just said, I think, is one of the most important things that gets overlooked. You know, when you're talking about writing, especially when you're talking about pairs, tandems, when writing, you know, the biggest holdup is the debate. is the me versus you when it comes to material, when it comes to what we're putting on the page. And what Adam just said that made that process so easy was he and Will got along so good that there was never a thing where it mattered that much. It was easy to go, okay, well, you're right. Oh, okay, I see your point. And I think that's normally where gold comes from. And, you know, you talk about Lauren in the room, it's crazy to hear you say that because I never got that far, Adam. I didn't get to the part of you're going to be moving to New York.
Wow.
Yeah, I just got the call. I got the call saying I didn't get it.
Well, if it makes you feel good, Kevin, I guarantee you he regrets that. So I've seen him regret not hiring people before. Like Jim Carrey always stuck in his craw. Like, how did I miss Jim Carrey? So... You know, Lauren prides himself on his eye for talent, and he's very good at it, but he does miss sometimes. So
who else did he miss? I know Jim Carrey. I know myself. Who else is a big miss? Do you know off the top of your head?
I'm trying to think.
I know Jim Carrey for sure.
Yeah, Jim Carrey was one that really bugged him. I think you probably auditioned after I was there, so I never got to hear him say he regretted not hiring you. We tried to get Jack Black when I was there. I was head writer. I was pushing for Jack.
Ooh.
And I think Jack may have said no.
Wow.
I think Jack had enough going on. But I don't know, man. You and Carrie may be his biggest regrets.
Jack Black is huge, too. Jack Black would have been amazing on SNL.
Oh, it would have been amazing. He tried to hire Danny McBride, but I think McBride said no, too.
Ooh.
I think there's some people that have said no. But, you know, your point about the script, what we were talking about, that's a big thing. If you're writing with anyone, it always has to be about the script. It has to be about the movie. The second it becomes about you, you're kind of screwed up because the movie always wins. It's like, what's best for the movie? What's best for the script? What's best for the edit? And Will is very good at that, even though he was the star of these movies. He never was like, give me that. Mm-hmm. Like, he was always like, let's just make a great movie. And I think that's why a lot of the movies Will and I did together had a lot of other funny people in them. You know, if you go back to Anchorman, you had Paul Rudd, you had Steve Carell, you had John C. Reilly in Talladega Nights, and on and on and on. We did Get Hard with you. You're screamingly funny through the whole movie. So, that was one of the big tricks was he always made it about the movie. And he's a unique guy in that sense.
Absolutely.
And his ego is... pretty healthy.
You know what's great too, and I noticed from working with him, I will say when you're talking about the bits and you're talking about the ability to go in and out of bits off camera, we're talking off camera.
Yeah.
We're talking a person to person bit. One of the best at going person to person with the bits. And Adam, here's the crazy thing. You're no stranger to the bit game. So hearing you say this, I can understand it and I know it to be true. From just being around you, like, you know, the walking bit. It's the person that at any point in time could just jump into a bit and then casually jump out of a bit. And you both know it's a bit, and that's what makes it fun. A bit is something as simple as seeing somebody and you're going, hey, man, God, whatever. Where were you at? Where you mean? Where was I at? Where were you at? I told you to get on the plane. I didn't get on the plane. Whatever. It's a thing of back and forth in comedy.
Kevin, I tried to join the Air Force, and I'm older. And I actually got into the Air Force for a month and it did not go well. I'm not in great shape. So I'm back. And the best thing with the bit is someone overhears you, thinks it's real. And then like a week later, you hear someone come up to you and go, hey, did you really try and join the Air Force? And you're like, no, I was doing a bit.
No, and, I was in a bit.
Yeah.
Didn't do no Air Force. I was in a bit.
Yeah.
No.
I'm 53 years old. I can't join the Air Force. Well, we didn't know. Someone said it. Bits are the best, and bits are great, too, when you're shooting a comedy because it gets everyone loose. Everyone's joking around. You're all listening to each other, so I'm a big believer in bits on set.
I love them. Here's another question for you, man. You know, you brought up Anchorman, right? I just want to go to the success that the movie had. Unbelievable success. And this is in a time where I felt comedy was at its highest here, right? Like, there's this era that you and Judd were playing in, right? With movies, with funny, and comedy had such a strong presence on the big screen. Right now, you know, like the action, the family adventure, the Marvel world, they've kind of taken the front stage, and they've been there for a minute. And I've still had success in comedies. There's still a couple other sporadic people that have had some success in comedies, but it's a thing where studios feel like there's a tug of war. Like, well, are people going to see them? Are they not? Like, how do we position them? There's a bigger conversation with you guys and this Anchorman. Did you know, like, when you were done writing this, did you know we got gold? Or was it a thing of like, you know, this is a great project, we're gonna get some good people that we're gonna put on it, and it's just, we're gonna be able to make a good movie? Or did you know I got fucking gold in my hand with this script?
We really liked it. We laughed hard when we were writing it, but then we took it to every studio, every financier, every indie place in town, and every single one said no. So it was like there was one day where we were getting all the no's were coming in, and it was no, no, no. And we were like, whoa, what? And so we kind of thought, like, are we crazy? Or like, we not good writers? Like, we couldn't figure out what was going on. And so we kind of got kicked to the back of the line. And the only movie that Ferrell had offered to him was this movie where he was a grown man playing an elf. And Ferrell's like, I got to do this elf movie. Will you help me with it and rewrite it? Because it's all I can do. And I was like, crap, wow, how did this happen? Like, so we had to go to my apartment in New York City, and we were just sitting there rewriting this script where he's a grown man playing an elf. And we're like, well, we better make this good. I mean, I don't know what else to do. And then fortunately, he had done another movie where he wasn't the lead called Old School. God bless Todd Phillips. Todd Phillips saw how funny he was and cast him as like the third or fourth lead. And he totally broke out of that. So while Elf was being shot or edited, while it was being edited, we then, because of Old School, DreamWorks, who had done Old School, called us up and we're like, okay, now we want to do Anchorman. And that was it. And that's how we finally, as we used to say, got to play with like big kids' toys. We got to get the cameras, got to get the equipment, got to get the crew and do our first movie.
Was Will still on SNL at the time when Elf came? He was still there? Did he leave?
Let me try and remember when he left. I think he was still.
That's a very pivotal moment.
He was still on SNL. He was still on SNL. Yeah, he was still doing SNL because I left in like 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. And he left, I think, in like 2003. So he had done Old School, Elf, and then we filmed Anchorman. He might have left when we were doing Anchorman, or maybe it was right after it he left SNL.
And with you with Anchorman, this was the directing debut, the writing, everything, the whole nine. You know, was it a tough sell for you at that point with the studio? Like, yo, I'm gonna direct it. Like, I wanna do this film. I wanna have control over it. Like, after Will had that success, was it hard for him to sell you as his guy, or for the studio to buy you as being the guy?
Well, before he had this success with Old School, it was impossible. No one would do it. They're like, this guy isn't directed. I'd done a bunch of short films on SNL. But some of them were a little strange. I think they scared off some of the studios. They were like, what is this? And so once he hit with Old School, then it was like I was able to get through the wire. Like, up until that point, it wasn't going to happen. And so they wanted Will so badly. They wanted his next project so badly. Plus, they knew I could direct. I mean, they'd seen my short films. And you know, some of them were a little more mainstream. Some were a little crazy. And they had met with me. They knew I knew what I was doing. So from that point on, the second we got to film, it was just pure enjoyment. It was so fun.
And putting the cast together, you know, from the gate, when you guys were writing, did you know that's who you wanted? Did you know that you wanted to go after Steve? Did you know that you wanted to go after, you know, everybody that was in? I mean, what was the cast? Go through the cast of Anchorman for me.
It was Carell. It was Christina Applegate. It was Paul Rudd. It was Dave Koechter. It was Fred Willard. It was Vince Vaughn. But no, we actually auditioned people. We didn't know who was going to play Veronica Corningstone. So we auditioned a bunch of people. we had some really good people audition too, and we kept doing callbacks, and it really came down to Applegate was perfect. And then we did auditions for all the other roles. And I remember we were torn between Steve Carell and this other actor. And finally, I just said, look, I was in Chicago when Steve Carell was at Second City. I've never seen the guy not be funny. And that was the tiebreaker. It was just like, he's always good. And then Rudd was between Rudd and Bob Odenkirk. Those were our two choices. And people don't know, but Odenkirk wasn't really acting much back then. He was more of a writer who did some little parts. And that was a tough decision because they were both hilariously funny. We loved both of them. And ultimately the studio was like, can we go with the guy who's more of an actor? And that was the tiebreaker on that. But I always say to Will to this day, like, hey, we had pretty good taste. Like Odenkirk, you know, no one was casting him. And no. it was between him and Rudd.
No, that's strong.
And then Vince Vaughn, we knew we wanted. Like, we knew Vaughn was perfect as the foil for Wes Mantoot. So fortunately, Vaughn did us a solid. He did the movie. And then Willard is an all-time comedy legend. We wanted him.
Legend.
We got legend. Chris Parnell was in there. Catherine Hahn had a small role in there. And she was awesome. Luke Wilson pops up. Ben Stiller does a cameo. Tim Robbins. We kept kind of like filling out those roles with little cameos and friends and stuff. But it was a crazy movie. I mean, when we first test screened it, it got laughs the whole way through. But at the end, we got our scores. And you know how they do it, Kevin. You get that score. It's from 1 to 100.
You get the score.
And they count the top two boxes. You think the movie's excellent or very good. And they total them up. And generally speaking, you want to be above a 70, right? You want to be, and maybe even above a 65. At our first screening, we got a 50. And we were like, what? And the marketing lady came to us from DreamWorks, and she says, you idiots, you killed the dog. And I said, what do you mean we killed the dog? Like, because originally Baxter got kicked off a bridge by Jack Black, but he doesn't come back in the movie. That was it. And I'm like, but it looks so fake. Does anyone really think the dog died? And then, so sure enough, we did a reshoot and we had the dog come back and our scores went up 25 points. Like,
oh my God.
Night and day, total difference. And I was like, all right, note to self, don't ever kill the dog.
I love you coming back. You idiot. You killed the dog. Yeah, what are you talking about? It was funny. You talk about when Baxter gets booted off the bridge. It's one of our biggest laughs in the movie.
Yeah,
but he's dead. Yeah, I know, but it's not a real dog. It's not a real dog. So is this when you guys, I would say, like, there's a moment that I've had, right, in my career where it's like, you know, the light bulb went off. And the light bulb was that I can make my own movies. You know, I can now produce, write, develop my own films with my team, with my company, right? And it's one of the best feelings to have is the one of, like, control, kind of controlling your destiny, your future, and having the trust in your partner, right? Like, you're technically still being hired, but you're more of a partner. When did the light bulb go off for you, Adam, that you could put some consistency behind developing these films? Like, was it after Anchorman and seeing, like, oh, wow, people saw this material, people love the material, I want to give people more of this. Like, what was your personal light bulb of this is what it's about to be? It can be so much more.
I would say it was after Talladega Nights, because you do it once and you think, like, with Anchorman, there's a little part of you that just, you've only done it once. So you wonder, is it a fluke? Can we really do this again?
This is Goldmines, hosted by Kevin Hart.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show, because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Now more from Kevin Hart on Gold Mines.
And then when we did Talladega Nights, and I felt like we got even better at filmmaking. I'm not saying it's a better movie, but just our filmmaking chops got better. And it felt really comfortable. After that, it was like, oh, wow, this is awesome. And then after that, we also started producing. We started producing some smaller movies. Initially, we did Eastbound and Down. We did a couple little indie movies. And then we're really starting to kind of feel it like, oh, I think we kind of know how to do this. And that led us to Step Brothers, which at the time was the craziest movie we had done because we were feeling good. So we just said, let's really cut loose. Like, let's not worry about anything. Let's just make the exact movie we would want to see. And then when that worked, we were like, wow, like, this is crazy. That was the craziest movie that we could make. And it got the most mixed reviews, of course, because it was pretty crazy and silly. And yet it still did really well. And we loved it. And we were feeling really good. So the kind of peak was end of Talladega Nights into Step Brothers, where that's when Will and I started Gary Sanchez Productions together. We started a production company. That's when we were really starting to like make movies. That's where like we ended up doing, even though I didn't direct it, we produced Get Hard with you. I would come up with story ideas. I would do rewrites on the scripts. And it was just a blast. We did the campaign, which once again, I didn't write it, but I did a rewrite. Jay Roach directed it. So we were starting to do all these movies for Will. We were starting to produce a lot more. And then kind of in between the other guys and Anchorman 2, then we were doing a ton of stuff. Then we were doing all kinds of movies, all kinds of TV shows, and the company started getting really big at that point. Yeah.
You're all over the map, but in such a strong way, you know, even when in dramas. One of my favorite shows on TV, I remember I saw your names and I was like, holy shit, Succession. What is it? Succession? Succession. I'm like, holy shit. You know, when you just start to see the things that your hands are in and that you're tied to and the resume that you guys have put together. Backing up, though, just to go from Talladega Nights to Step Brothers, you know, once again, these were so strong because they were character driven, right? And like, you know, the premises were so crazy, but yet so grounded within the performances. Was that a thing that you guys kind of tried to stay true to or focus on as you came up with the crazy ideas? Was it making sure that you put Will in a position to kind of be able to go as wild and above as he can, but at the same time, just grounded to find the belief in the character to make it that much funnier?
Yeah, that was something we learned as we went along, and especially with Talladega Nights, was that as crazy as the world was, you had to play it consistently. that it had to be like, I mean, if you look at old comedies like the Blues Brothers or Airplane or any of those old legendary comedies, as crazy as they were true to themselves. You know, you didn't break your reality. And also there was like a real story, like even in the movie Airplane, they got to land the plane. They're going to die. Like you actually, even though it's ridiculous, you a little bit care that they're going to land the plane. So we started getting better and better at that. And I've always been a film fan anyway. I like all kinds of movies. So one of the nice things we were able to do is draw from all these other kinds of movies. Then I brought on like a real heavy hitter DP and Oliver Wood, who shot like Bourne Identity, and he did Talladega Nights. So we started realizing that the better the filmmaking was, the more the reality and the stakes would go up. And then the funnier you could be because you believe the world to some degree. And I think that's what all those comedies were teaching me, like different ways to shoot things, different ways you could be artful and at the same time, entertaining, that you could have a little bit of a message while still being entertaining and still being funny. So, yeah, all those comedies were like the best film school you could ever have because you just get to play with different looks and styles and work with composers and DPs.
And it does really pop your product. You know, that's the space that I'm playing in now as well. You know, sometimes, you know, I like now that for some of the things coming out, I wanted to put like a darker, grimier feel on some things. And still, there's still the comedy component, but the look of it gives you more of an artistic approach to the film. And, you know, like you said, that's where the creative juices start to flow even more when you start to bring in the strengths around you from people that have done other things. And, you know, you're mirroring certain looks by giving a different genre. It just adds a nice bonus, man. So it's dope to hear you drop the gems that you're dropping because I think they're so valuable and ones that my listeners will be able to take away. You know, that's the purpose of this thing, to hear and understand. You know, you're getting inside the minds of these goddamn geniuses. And oh, what a genius we got on the show right now. We're inside the mind of Adam McKay. And I love it. Adam, is there a preference? I mean, you talked about television as well. One of my favorite shows, Eastbound and Down. I got to be honest, Danny McBride, you know, this is when I really got a strong dose of just how funny Danny was. Like, you know, I knew he was funny because I had seen him in movies and I had seen like, you know, cameos and stuff that he had did. But in this show, he really got down, man. He really got down.
So funny. So funny. And by the way, Kevin, another great example of Jody Hill, his partner, who's a director. You know, those guys all went to film school. Those guys know how to shoot. Mm. They understand the history of the film. David Gordon Green is another person they work with who's a legitimately talented filmmaker. So they always had a real specific style to that show. And talk about ahead of their time. I mean, they're doing this show about like, you know, unhinged red state kind of pride and like, you know, boisterousness. And like, and I remember at the time people being like, is this too much? Well, guess what? Now it's our reality. Like,
oh my God,
Kenny Powers would be a congressman from like South Carolina now, you know,
Kenny Powers would be president.
Yeah.
Kenny Powers.
but no, I love that show. Succession's been amazing. And yeah, I've transitioned, you know, I had a great run with Will. We had about 14 years together with Gary Sanchez. And now I have a new company, Hyper Object Industries.
That's what I was about to get to.
Yeah. And it's been fun. And that's that dividing line you were talking about. That's kind of Succession is when it started to kind of zig and zag a little bit. But it's been really fun. And you get to work with these great people. I get to work with Danny McBride. I get to work with like this Norwegian director, Tommy Wirkola. I get to work with Andrew Gerlin, like all these really interesting people. You know, we got to do the movie Hustlers and work with Loreen Scafaria, who's immensely talented, and all these different cool projects. Olivia Wilde with Booksmart, and it's been really fun.
With your reason for, you know, wanting to step away, was it a mutual decision between you and Will of just like, you know, we've had a great run, we've had a great time, we both get each other, understand each other, but let's just see what the other things are that we can kind of discover on different paths, or what? Like, what was the reason for the separation?
I mean, you know, I could give one of those fake nice answers like, hey, we're buddies. But the truth is he slept with my wife. And there's certain, I was like, I can either go to prison right now or I can move on. And I chose to move on. Yeah.
Yeah. Smart. And, smart. And that's the type of guy you are. you're going to think it through. You're going to think it through no matter what. This is a bit. This is a bit.
It's
people.
A bit,
He's in
folks.
A bit.
It's
He's
a
in
bit.
A bit. This is a bit.
We had like 14 years. The company got really big. I mean, we had a lot of people working for us, a lot of moving parts.
At your height, how many? How many people?
Oh, God, I think we had about 15 working for us, but that wasn't enough.
Wow.
Because we had so many movies and TV shows going, so we might have had to expand. We also had Funny or Die, which had like 60 people working for them. We had all the representatives and the legal and the financial. I mean, if you put everyone together, you might have been at 100 people. Ooh. And it was just a big behemoth. And I think the weight of it got to be a little tiring. You know, you reach that point where it's like, boy, this is a lot. And, you know, you're managing a business. And both of us just felt like, hey, we've had a great run. Like, this got a little bigger, I think, than Will or I wanted. And it was time to kind of step away. So he's got a little small company now. And then I started the new one. And it's been great. Like, it's so nice to kind of go back to a little bit of a smaller size. And at the same time, I was definitely headed in more of a dramatic kind of political direction. So we get to kind of go unabashedly in that direction. I'll always do comedy. That'll always be a part of what I do. But, you know, at the same time, we've done stuff like the Q Into the Storm docuseries that was just on HBO is something we produced. And, a show like Painting with John, which is definitely a very offbeat show. So we've been having a blast. We're kind of leaner, smaller, a little more, you know, idiosyncratic, but at the same time, still doing big shows and projects. And it's been really fun.
You know, it's crazy to hear you say that, you know, it got kind of big, because sometimes, you know, while you're in it, you don't realize the pace that you're growing at. Right. And I call it the success monster. I was having this conversation with a friend of mine that's a writer. And, you know, I said, the one thing about success is that it truly is a monster. And I said, the monster, it can be on your side or not, right? And there's certain things that the monster does really well. And when it comes to growth, one thing that the monster is good at doing is getting bigger. Monsters can get big if you feed it. And that success that you're talking about, you and Will were having along the way, well, you look up and you go, holy fuck. Look at you, like you're talking about, you know, 50 people over here, 40 people over here. What do you mean I need a COO, a CFO? What are you talking about? We need our own lawyers. What do you mean we can't use the agents and we got to have our, oh my God, you now have this goddamn pyramid of structure that started off with just you and ideas and in a room or apartment writing sketches, and then it turned into writing scripts, and all of a sudden you're managing hundreds of millions of dollars. It happens so fast. It happens so fast. And then there's a want. There's a want attached to what you do well from the people that you're now in business with. And sometimes that's where it becomes overwhelming. That's where the pressure can add up. So I totally get it. Totally understand, man. And, you know, I think it's an amazing story. It's an amazing story to have, and one, an even more amazing story to tell.
You know it is too, Kevin. Like, you want everything you do to count. You know, you want, when you make a TV show, when you make a movie, whatever you do, a podcast, you know, we have a couple podcasts that just came out. You want them all to count. You don't want anything to feel like a big company is putting it out. Mm-hmm. You know, you see these media conglomerates that own like 10 different, you know, studios. But there's a reason like creative groups never become that big. There's no equivalent of like Apple for a creative group. You know, it's like you kind of have to stay medium to small sized and to make everything you do count and to really pay attention to it. And that was really the thing, I think, for Will and I both felt like, man, there's a lot of stuff coming out of this company. And you want to make sure you pick up each apple and look at it and make sure it's not bruised or doesn't have a worm in it. And when the conveyor belt starts moving too fast, it makes it hard to...
You're not getting the look
at it. Yeah, yeah.
You're not seeing everything, and I don't want to say that you're not happy with the things that are positioned to be a representation of your work, your company, but that's the biggest, that's the priority. The priority is, what are people seeing and identifying with our names at this point? And are we managing these things correctly? Like, to your point of picking up the apple. And it's one thing, you know, it's one thing at Heartbeat and Laugh Out Loud, which is becoming tough. To your point, it's like, you know, making sure that I lay eyes on the product and that I have time to lay eyes and that I have time to give my feedback, my opinion. And, you know, even when you put people in position to kind of
voice.
Yes, they're in position to echo me or to be a representation of what I see and what I would feel. You still don't feel as comfortable as you should because you still are like, I need to see it because I haven't and I know you did, but I got to look. I got to let me read it. I got to. And it does become a lot. It's a high volume to it, man. I totally understand.
I mean, you know, too, Kevin, and especially with your career, how you got to where you're at. You got to it through a really nice bond with your audience, right? Your audience loves you.
Absolutely.
You understand them. They understand you. So then when your name's on something, they're trusting you. They're like, oh, I love Kevin. And same with Will and I, too. It's, you know, for all of us. I mean, it's, you know, we're not like family with our audience, but they trust us. They know we're not going to bullshit them. They know we're going to, you know, be fairly well-behaved, that we're going to try and do good stuff. And it was, yeah, when it really got churning, there were a lot of things coming through. And so now with the new company, we triple check everything. We don't ever do anything for money. We only do it if we love it. It has to be special. We don't do anything because we think it's going to be a hit. We try and just do it because it's good. And it's been nice. Like, the stress has just reduced. We're enjoying, like, it makes work less like work when you're doing that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. You got to keep the fun. You have to keep the door open to enjoy what you do. The day that you stop, it becomes a difficult job. It really does. You said earlier, you said you're 53, man, 53 years old. Is there a end time for Adam McKay? Is there a landmark that you're working towards that you're like, you know what? When I get here, this is where I'm gonna sit down and I'm just gonna chill out. Have you thought about that yet?
You know, it's funny. I talk with my wife about it sometimes, and the truth is, and I bet you feel the same way. What we do, we love so much that if I were working another job, I would try and retire so I could do what I'm doing right now. So. I don't think I'll ever stop doing some form of what I do. Now, is it possible when I'm like, God willing, when I'm 88 years old, that I'm writing books instead, or I'm doing paintings, or I'm playing in a cover band? I don't know. But like, I can't imagine. I just enjoy it too much. I mean, it's Sunday and you and I are doing a podcast. It's yes. Mother's Day and you and I are doing a podcast. I mean, if you and I worked at like a Target stocking shelves, God bless the people that work at Target stocking shelves. They don't go in on a day off on Mother's Day to stock the shelves, you know?
Yeah.
So we're lucky. We're lucky that we get to do this. So I don't ever really see an end time for it. I will do some form of what I do for the rest of my life just because I love it, love it, love it.
I love that, man. And it inspires me. It inspires me to hear you say that. You know, when I'm talking to people that are older than me in the business, who I have so much respect and admiration for, you know, just hearing the voice of long term and how you see it, and how you see it playing out. You know, and I'm such a 10 year ahead thinker. You know, what about 10 from now? What do I want? You know, where am I at? How am I positioning myself? And, you know, this is why I try to check all these boxes, Adam. This is why I'm checking the literature, you know, the voiceover, animation, family adventure, the IP, the talk shows, radio, podcast. It's like, you know, you just try to check as many boxes as you can because I'm having so much fun and discovery within more. Right. I love the fact that you just keep discovering more. And what I'm finding such a high level of interest in now is talking to my peers, but in a way to where it's not programmed. Like, I like this. I like these genuine conversations. And the reason why, Adam, is because I feel like it puts me in a position to get people to give information that would never be shared or told. It'll never be shared or told. And people would kind of just be left figuring out a volume of stuff when I can present it to you differently. And what we're doing now is doing just that, man. There's so much value in the things that you're saying. So much.
I mean, how crazy is it? Like, you know, you're doing a gigantic movie in Budapest. You know, I'm in edit on a big old movie right now. One of the most satisfying experiences I've ever had in my life was in this past year. I got to make a podcast. Now, who would have ever guessed, like, we're having a podcast right now. I went and did a podcast, this big kind of investigative podcast. So enjoyable, so fascinating.
It's the sport, the basketball one, right? Is it the basketball one?
Yeah, it's called Death at the Wing. And it's just been endlessly fascinating. Everyone around me is like, what are you doing? Why are you doing a podcast? You have a movie going. You have another TV show that you're producing for HBO. You have another show that you just shot the pilot for. Why are you doing a podcast? And I'm like, because it's fascinating. I got to talk to Jerry West for an hour about mental health. I got to talk to Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Jane Mayer. We had Craig Hodges from the Championship Bulls on.
Bulls.
And, you know, like, we've just had these guests on. Like, I talked to people who were involved around the shooting of Benji Wilson in Chicago. I had one of the most intense conversations ever with Billy Moore, who pulled the trigger. It was the heaviest conversation of my life. Like, on and on and on. And that's a podcast. Like, I didn't do that to get paid. I didn't do that for, you know, to strut around the block like I'm big time Charlie. It was just really interesting. And so you doing this podcast, perfect example. Like, do what you love, do what excites you, do what you're interested in, and you never go wrong. I know that's an old cliche, but it really is the God's honest truth. Like, if you're loving what you're doing, you can't go wrong.
I mean, I can't say it any better, man. There is no bigger punctuation to what you just said than what you just gave. It's something that sounds so easy, but yet so many people struggle with, and understandable, you know? It's I get why some people struggle with it.
I think it's the money. I think the money messes things up, because I think you get some people that go into comedy or filmmaking or whatever because part of them wants to make money. And I understand that, especially when times are so hard for so many people in this country right now.
Absolutely.
So nothing but respect. But it does mess up the process. It does. Like, I was lucky in that I had no expectations when I was doing this. I just was having a blast. I was doing improv theater in Chicago. I loved writing comedy. I remember thinking, like, oh, if I just stay in Chicago and do improv comedy and teach improv, I'd be happy with that. And then things kept happening and happening and happening. And it was always a surprise to me. There was never any sense of, I'm going to end up here. I'm going to do this. It was just keep doing what you love. And it kind of follows along. But it's easier said than done. I mean, it's hard.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't mean to take that lightly. I was lucky in the sense that just I was who I was. I was where I was. It was in the 90s. That was back at a time where you could live in a crappy apartment and be kind of broke. Times have changed, you know. So it was a different situation. I was really lucky to be in it.
Well, I'll tell you this, man. I'm lucky to have had you. I'm lucky to call you a friend, man. And I'm lucky to say that I've actually been able to work with the talent that you possess. Adam McKay, ladies and gentlemen, I've forever been a fan, but it's so dope to hear you talk and drop the gems that you dropped today, man. You've been responsible for, you know, so much. Like I said, in this space of comedy, some of our favorite movies, I ran them off at the top of the podcast, man. This man's responsible for, and still finding more joy in doing what he loves and switching it up from drama to comedy to podcasts, like he just voiced. The man is literally somebody that inspires and motivates me just because he keeps going. Adam, I'm lucky to say that my listeners were able to get inside the mind of Adam McKay today.
One thing I do want to say, and this is a testament to what a legitimately good guy Kevin Hart is that years and years ago, might have been 10 years ago, well, there used to be a thing called the NBA Entertainment League. And it was people from Hollywood would play in this league. We would wear legitimate uniforms. We had referees. There was like a trainer. And we would play. And let me tell you something right now. I'm going to say this from a neutral point of view. Kevin can ball. Kevin's quick. He's got a handle. He could score. He's confident. He's a team general. I, on the other hand, am not much of a baller. And when you're not much of a baller, when you're in a game like that, I mean, I can hit a jump shot. I can rebound. I can play a little bit of defense. But I'm not much of a baller. The thing in those games, people get intense and they like yell at you. You're like grown men on the court and some guy's yelling at me. And a couple times I was like, man, don't yell at me. Like, I'm a grown man. Don't yell at me just because you're half my age. Kevin, nothing but nice the whole time. Hitting me with like perfect no-look passes, bouncing off my face, blowing layups. Never once was like, come on, man. Not one single time. And then when I would occasionally make a good play, I'd hear him clapping his hands like, way to go, McKay. Way to go. And by the way, I had only done like a couple movies at that point. So it wasn't like he was like respecting a guy with a resume. I had done like Anchorman and maybe Talladega Nights. So I was kind of a known director. But never, like, we had Orlando Jones on our team. Jones would yell at everyone. And Orlando Jones, by the way, not that good.
Not good at all. He wasn't
good. Not much
of
a baller. And would blow shot after shot and then scream at us.
Oh,
and like, Kevin, best player on the team, floor general, hell of a handle, never, grown man, showed another grown man respect. The highest praise I can give another man.
Adam, I swear to you, I remember like it was yesterday. The Entertainment E-League. We played for the Magic, right? Wasn't that team
the
Magic?
That's right.
We played,
Magic.
Yes, we played for the Magic. Oh, my God.
He was a decent human being, even in the face of abject poor basketball.
That is an amazing story, man. That's an amazing story. I was always, don't worry about it, McKay. You got it. We'll get the next one. Let's get back on D. Yeah, always positive. I don't have a negative bone in my body, man. I don't know how.
I appreciate it. It says a lot about you.
Thank you, man. I thank you. I appreciate the story. I hope my listeners enjoyed this as much as I did. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Comedy Gold Mines. And what an amazing mind today's was. Adam McKay. Thank you, man.
Always love you, Kevin. Such a pleasure.
Gold Mines with Kevin Hart is a Sirius XM and Laugh Out Loud radio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, and Eric Weil. Produced by Danny Sellers and Leslie Guam, and engineered by Danny Sellers.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.